my pleasure to introduce to you our guest, Professor Manfred Bienfeld, who is a professor of economics at the University of Carleton. He has been on this show before, I think about a year and a half ago, and we had quite a discussion about economics. Today we are going to be talking, zeroing on the recommendations of a group that is quite active in the city called the Group of 78. So I'm going to ask Manfred now to, first of all, tell us briefly about himself and then a little bit about the group. Manfred.
Thank you, guys, and thank you very much for giving me another opportunity to speak to your listeners. A quick correction, I am an economist by training at Carleton University. I'm in the School of Public Policy and Administration. I've worked in the field of international development all of my life. Was for many years in England at the Institute of Development Studies, and have gradually come to focus more and more on one central question, which is the relationship between global economic integration and specifically financial integration and national sovereignty, the ability of countries to pursue democratically determined choices. And that's really the central theme of the remarks I want to make later. Currently, I'm a member of the Group of 78. This group was arose in 1981 when 78 prominent Canadians, many of them with a lot of experience in the foreign service, issued a declaration calling on the government to ensure that Canadian foreign policy stayed true to certain basic principles. And the three objectives, which were outlined at that time as the central objectives, were the removing of the threat of nuclear war, secondly, the creation of a more equitable international order, and thirdly, strengthening of the United Nations, of multilateralism, and of international law. Now, that was quite some time ago, and more recently the group has revised its terms of reference, but in essence they are more detailed elaborations of that original theme, but they are basically staying true to that theme, adjusting for the fact that the world has changed quite dramatically since that time. Very quickly, the group's main activities revolve around a monthly seminar. And the recent series have been extremely stimulating and very well attended, and I would like to really encourage people to look at the website, G78 website, for future events. The most recent was this week, Carolyn McCaskill talking about multilateralism, and it really was extremely helpful and stimulating.
And you have annual meetings as well, conferences, right?
And we have an annual conference, which is always at the end of September this year. It will be September 28th, 29th. It will be on lessons to be drawn from Canada's involvement in Afghanistan.
Oh, so that should be interesting.
It should be of great interest to many people. And last year's conference, and this is really the theme that I wanted to talk to briefly, was the formal title of it was The Growing Struggle Between Democracy and Global Economic Liberalization.
Okay, and what is the main hypothesis here? Is it that the two are always go together, or they're compatible, or they're non-compatible, or what?
Well, it's interesting you should put it that way. There is a very widespread view that market liberalization and democracy are two sides of the same coin, that they're mutually reinforcing. And the truth is that that is true to a degree, but as is almost always the case, it depends on certain parameters and circumstances. And there are, and I should here emphasize that here I'm speaking as an individual member of the Group of 78. I'm not speaking for the group. We have a rather diverse membership of concerned citizens. But the issues that I'm talking about were issues that were extensively discussed at our recent annual conference. The concern is that the increasing internationalization of markets, and in particular of financial markets, has created a situation in which economic spaces are no longer congruent with political spaces, so that you have political processes which are rooted in particular political spaces, but those political processes find it increasingly difficult to manage national economies because the national economy is less and less significant as an economic space. And so we find, I believe, in many areas around the world, and interestingly in both developed and developing countries, we find a phenomenon where citizens are constantly expressing certain priorities, electing certain kinds of governments, clearly wanting to shape the world in a certain way. But it turns out that they are that no government, even truly committed governments, is able to pursue such paths, because international markets, corporations, multinational corporations, now have a degree of power which it makes it very difficult for countries to break out of that mold.
It would be helpful if you gave us some examples, you know, because our listeners perhaps don't have a great understanding of economics, like just like me.
Well, maybe the best example, and one that's currently in the news constantly, is Greece. We all know that Greece is going through a very, very difficult phase. The Greek population is suffering grievously. Thousands of people who were not long ago secure in a middle-class existence are suddenly finding themselves on the verge of homelessness, or even homeless, without prospect of employment. And the question is, what has happened here? What went wrong?
Right.
And the point is that there were mistakes that were made in Greece, but the extreme version of the problem which is now being experienced is very, very closely related to the fact that Greek national finances have become critically dependent on international bond markets, which are subject to speculative forces that have the ability to shift the parameters within which governments have to function. A very interesting article that appeared in 2010, written by a true insider, James Rickards, who was once legal counsel for long-term capital management, one of the biggest hedge funds in the world, writes about Greece in an article entitled "How Markets Attacked the Greek Piñata." And he basically describes exactly how these markets pick on countries that have weaknesses, real weaknesses. There's no problem that there are problems in Greece. But once they target these countries and start a certain process of trading, they push up the interest rates that these countries have to pay to sell the bonds on which the government depends. And Greece was in difficulty, as are most other countries, when it was paying 4% to sell its bonds. Once these processes started, that rose to 6% and then to 8%, and they are self-reinforcing processes. And I'd just like to summarize Rickards' own, and he says, as he writes the article, I know what I'm talking about, because the process I'm describing is exactly what we did every day of the week at long-term capital management. Mm-hmm. And so he concludes his article by saying, let's be clear, public finance in Greece is a mess. Statistics have been fudged, government pensions have been inflated, and reckless borrowing has been the norm. Drastic remedies are required. But the crisis is manageable, and Europe has sent clear signals that they will take care of their own house without help from China, America, or the IMF. Unfortunately, a measured response does no good to the dealers in credit derivatives, credit default swaps, CDSs, who require volatility and even panic to make their game profitable. If contagion spreads in uncontrollable ways, so much the better for the traders in volatility, never mind the collateral damage. And earlier on in the article, he says, describing the process in great detail of how this happens, he says at the very end, and what does all this have to do with Greece? Very little. It is not much more than a floating craps game in an alley off Wall Street.
Okay, on that note, I'm getting a signal for a break, and when we come back, we'll resume this conversation.
Time for another Chin Radio traffic update. تقرير حركة السير برعاية أوتاوا سان، أخبار محلية، رياضة، فنون وأراء بتوصل لبيوتكم يوميا. للاشتراك 613-739-7200.
Good afternoon. We already have one accident on the go, and that's at Terry Fox and Edgewater, but it should be wrapping up shortly. Taking a look at your drive home on the 417, eastbound and westbound lanes are moving well at this hour. As volume increases, still no delays or slowdowns. Small classes, dedicated faculty, and a family environment. This doesn't sound like your average school. Albert College is Canada's oldest co-educational boarding and day school located in Belleville. Visit albertcollege.ca. I'm Patricia Lever with traffic on Chin 97.9.
ترابكم برودكشن بتقدم لا سهرة وحدي البوب ستار رامي عياش
وبحب الناس الرايقة
النجمة دينا حايك
طال سهر وليالي العيد
والفنان إلي مسعد
بطل يقوم عشغلهم برهوم
بالاشتراك مع فرقة رقصات للدبكة الأحد 20 ماي بتودر هول احجزوا أماكنكم من اليوم 613-261-6161 أو 613-295-4045
RBC Royal Bank أو سامرو عندكم أسئلة عن المورجيجز وبدكم حدا يجاوبكم بوضوح وبالعربي حابين تتعلموا طرق ذكية لدفع المورجيج تبعكم بشكل أسرع إن كنتوا جديد بكندا وبدكم تشتروا أول بيت أو بدكم تستثمروا بالريال استيت وتشتروا 10 بيت أو سامرو أخصائي المورجيجز بالRBC Royal Bank راح يعلمكم كيف تمولوا أهدافكم وتوفروا ألاف الدولارات حكوا مع أو سامرو على الرقم 613-793-7930 واحصلوا على استشارة مجانية
بوكينغهام كادري دارغام كرايزلر جيب دوج أول ديلر بأوتاوا جاتنو لأصحابه من ولاد الجالي بوكينغهام كادري دارغام كرايزلر جيب دوج بيفتحوا 6 أيام بالأسبوع موديلات جديدة ومستعملة موجودين دقائق من داونتاون أوتاوا على 1265 ري أوديل داو جاتنو رقم التليفون 819-281-7788 That's 819-281-7788 ميشيل أدري وأسعد دارغام ببوكينغهام كادري دارغام Chrysler Jeep Dodge. Great deals, great financing.
A world of music, news and information on Chin Radio. Ottawa FM 97.9.
Welcome back to Dialogue with Diversity on Chin Radio 97.9 FM. Before I get back to our program talking about economics with Professor Manfred Winfield, just a few announcements in chronological order. I'll do them. First of all, a week today, our guest is going to be Sergeant John Medeiros. He has been on this show before, and he's going to be talking about the 2010 hate crime report that has come out and the implications in that, especially for our diverse community here in Ottawa. And later that evening, it will be the beginning of the Asian Heritage Month, which will start with the official launch on Wednesday, May the 2nd, just like the radio show, and it will be at 6:30 p.m. at the Canadian War Museum. And in fact, those of you who are interested in this, there is a whole month of this. It goes on from the 2nd of May to the 2nd of June, in fact. And you can find the details on the website www.asianheritagemonth.net. And on the 7th of May, I will be actually reading from my book, Two Boys from Aden College. It's a novel that I've written mostly about the human rights of Muslim women at the bookstore Octopus Books on 3rd Avenue, 116 3rd Avenue at Bank. And that will be at 7 p.m. So the 7th of May at 7 p.m., easy to remember. Okay, back to Dr. Binfeld, Professor Binfeld, and he was talking about Greece a minute ago, and I'll ask him to continue this conversation on this issue. Perhaps you could tell our listeners, perhaps, why is it that there are people or groups of people who can actually manipulate the interest rates that you talked about that were kind of going up and up and up progressively? Who does that? In whose interest is it?
Well, it's in the interests of certain people in the financial markets. The financial markets have acquired an unimaginable degree of power. In 1973, 8% of all profits earned in the U.S. economy accrued to the financial sector. By 2008, that figure had risen to 42%. But it's not about, I can't, in the short time available, I can't go into an analysis of that. My purpose in talking about Greece was to emphasize, was to provide an example of what happens when countries lose control over their ability to manage their economic affairs. They suddenly get engulfed in forces that are incredibly unstable, that have their own agendas, that are political, and that make it increasingly difficult for societies to practice democracy in a meaningful way. The Greeks have made unbelievable cuts in social services. They have mortgaged, they've undermined their future prosperity by the cuts that they've been making. And yet, even in today's paper, it is said that this whole process is entirely perverse. They've now made such dramatic cuts that the economy is declining so rapidly that it, despite having made those cuts, their ability to service their remaining debts has actually become less. This is exactly the story of the 1930s, and that's the story which we thought we'd all learn. It was always said that no country would ever again make dramatic cuts at a time when economies were already extremely weak. That was what we said for decades. That's why we would never have another depression. And what is important to understand here is that it is the shift in the relative power of national policymakers versus international markets that has upset a balance which did work very effectively at one time. There was a period of roughly a quarter century after the Second War when growth was very stable, was very rapid, but when the benefits of that growth were very widely distributed among the population, when jobs improved, quality of jobs, working hours declined. In other words, the markets were operating as they are supposed to operate. And I do believe that what we need to understand is that that was true because at that time markets were embedded in national political frameworks that have to exist in order for markets to serve the public interest. Markets need a framework within to operate. Mm-hmm. Markets push for lower cost production. But unless society sets some limits and gives some direction to that process can easily become unstable, divisive, and ultimately inefficient. And I believe that I have been writing for many years about the danger of returning to the conditions of the 1920s. And I do believe that we have returned to those conditions where debts have become totally unmanageable. Economies are increasingly unmanageable. Societies are disintegrating, income inequality is exploding, political legitimacy of governments is declining, and we need to get international financial flows back under control to a degree that allows governments to exercise the sovereignty that needs to be exercised in order to manage markets in the public interest.
But you use the word society at least three times, yes, just in the last sentence. Yes. But who's society? Who can set limits? It's really governments, big governments.
Well, exactly. And that's a very important question and a key question. Because and the big danger is that societies need, in order to respond to these crises in a constructive way, societies need to have a degree of coherence, and they need to have some kind of intellectual framework within which to look at these alternatives. What we see around the world is explosions of anger, but unfortunately in so many cases, once the tyrant falls, people end up standing in the square looking at each other saying, what do we do now? Because there is not a clear conception that there is a better alternative that we could rally behind. And for my own part, I believe that there is what used to be called a social democratic, or if you like, a socialist alternative. But let me emphasize, socialism, in my view at least, is not about doing away with markets. Mm-hmm. It's about embedding markets. Markets are important institutions in complex societies, but they do need to be embedded. The struggle is, the challenge is, to find a way of doing that. It has happened historically, and that's encouraging. That at least assures us that we're not talking about some hypothetical alternative. On the other hand, circumstances have changed dramatically. But when I want to be hopeful, I always remind my students, in 1927, A.J. Toynbee, then a leading British historian, said, 1927, he said, the economy is now so international that the nation state is nothing more than an irrelevant historical anachronism that has no future role to play. And then came the Depression, and then came the most intense phase of nationalism the world has ever experienced. So these things do change. We already see now, in the course of the last 10 years, we see new political possibilities emerging in many places. We just have to make sure that those responses, those reactions, don't end up taking a fascist form, which is what they did so frequently in the 30s, but that they take instead a social democratic form that seizes the opportunity to make use of markets in the human interest.
Mm-hmm. So in the last minutes or so, give us examples of countries where this has been achieved, whether recently or even in the several decades ago.
Well, I mean, the important point was that the quarter century after, between about 1947 and 1973, was absolutely remarkable in terms of the stability of growth, absence of financial crises, diffusion of economic benefits. And that was true of almost all industrial countries. Mm-hmm. Today, it's becoming increasingly difficult for any country to buck the trend because those international forces are so powerful. A few countries, and interestingly, some of the strongest developing countries, have bought a degree of protection by running up absolutely massive reserves, which have protected them to a degree and allowed them more degrees of freedom. That's why everybody, including the business community, is looking to China these days.
Mm-hmm. Well, we could talk about this for many hours. I suppose time is running out. Sorry about that, but thank you very much, Professor Bienfeld, for coming again to talk to us about this, and perhaps we'll schedule yet another meeting with you. In the final few seconds, just to remind you of two events coming up. One is the show next week is going to be with Sergeant Medeiros about the crime bill. And the other one is on the 7th of the May at 7 o'clock. There will be book reading of my novel, Two Boys from Aden College. Until we meet again next week at 3 in the afternoon, goodbye for now.